Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we are continuing with the seminar entitled Srimad Bhagavatam, the Natural Commentary on Vedanta Sutra. This is the second session of March 21st here in Sridham, Mayapur. So, to refresh the memories of those who were here yesterday and to bring up to date a little bit those who are new to this seminar, I'd like to ask those who were attending yesterday if anyone from among you can please, in a few words, tell us what is this term that is shown at the bottom of the board, Shakti Parinamavada, which is Lord Chaitanya's doctrine of the cause of all causes.
Well, basically, Shakti means Krishna's energy.
Mm-hmm. Parinama means?
Means transformation. Yes. So that the material world is just a transformation of Krishna's energies, therefore it's simultaneously distinct from yet one with Krishna, therefore Lord Chaitanya is Achintya Veda Veda Tattva.
Yes, that's a very nice answer. In a few words, he's explained the answer very completely. That Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has established the most perfect explanation of causation. And those who were here yesterday, you'll recall that we focused in on causation as being the essential feature of philosophy. Anything which can be termed philosophy must necessarily deal with the cause. If it does not deal with the cause, then it is not philosophy. And this is what Vedanta is all about. As you know, in Srila Prabhupada's purports, when he cites Vedanta Sutra, mainly he cites, of course, the first sutra, Atato Brahma Jignasha, and then the second sutra, Janmadyasya Yataha. This again and again and again you'll find. So what is Brahman? The first sutra says we are, as human beings, supposed to inquire into Brahman. And how is Brahman defined? As the source of everything, the cause. So this is what Vedanta is all about. Searching out the cause. That cause is Brahman. So, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has explained, teaching from Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra, that Krishna is the cause of all causes by sporting with his energies, his shaktis. Krishna, as the Supreme Lord, Parameshwara, is the controller of his energies, so by his divine influence, his shakti, his energies, they transform. And from this transformation comes out this entire material manifestation. Now, who can remember, this is an easy question, who can remember the example from Srimad Bhagavatam, the very nice, easy to understand example from Srimad Bhagavatam, which illustrates how Krishna plays with his energies, how he manifests them and plays with them and winds them back up, and how he fulfills these fourfold requirements of causation? What is the example? Yes, Mataji? The spider with the web, yes. We gave one reference. There are actually many references, many verses in Bhagavatam which present the same example. So this is an example obviously worth remembering, since Bhagavatam presents it again and again. So the spider is the nimitta karana, the operative or efficient cause. But the spider is also the ingredient cause or material cause. He's the source of the ingredients too. He's not only the one who puts the web together, but he's the one who gives the ingredient for the web. And thirdly, the spider gives the form to the web. The web is his own design. And fourthly, the web, the function of the web is understandable only in relationship with the spider. The spider is determining the function, the final cause or the purpose of the web. So this example can help us, can make very clear how Krishna is manifesting the material energy from his own transcendental self, how he is putting it together as the operative cause, how he is giving it form. Svarupena, pradan rupena, means from the Lord's own form. Svarupena means his own form. Pradan, material nature, rupena, has its form. Therefore, this entire universe, Vishvarupa, is explained in Bhagavatam as a form of the Lord. Sometimes it is compared to the shadow of Krishna. Just as we have our physical form, and this physical form casts a shadow. So the only reason the shadow has a form is because we have an original physical form. And Krishna is the purpose of creation. We explained this yesterday too. Srila Prabhupada says that this material existence is a chance offered to the living entities to become Krishna conscious. So, that's a review. Now, there was one other thing I wanted to note. That this Shakti Parinamavada philosophy, that is actually the subject of the Chatushloki, the famous Chatushloki of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The four nutshell verses in second canto, chapter 9, text 33 to 36, I believe. So this is the Chatushloki. So we're not going to go into Chatushloki because that's very vast subject matter. A whole seminar could be given on that. But just for your own study, your own reference, you'll find that these four verses, nutshell verses, are explaining the same Shakti Parinamavada philosophy. So now, we want to turn our attention in today's seminar to challenges against Vedanta philosophy or Bhagavat philosophy coming from the side of the atheistic Sankhya philosophers. Now, I explained yesterday what atheistic Sankhya philosophy is basically. Now, we may be wondering, well, what is the relevance of that? It's very nice that in Vedic culture, in ancient India, there were some philosophers called Sankhya philosophers, and they made arguments against the Vedantists. But what does that have to do with anything today? Well, it has very much to do with today, because as you'll find in Srila Prabhupada's books, he very often compares Sankhya philosophy to modern science. And there are some very, very fundamental correlations, very, very fundamental basic similarities. One of them, which is quite interesting actually, is the concept of a very intimate connection, a very intimate relationship between consciousness and matter. The Sankhya philosophers, they of course say reality is ultimately just two things. reality can be analyzed and broken down, finally categorized in two tattvas, two truths. The one they call Purusha, which means the conscious soul, or the many unlimited conscious souls. And the other is Prakriti, material nature. And they say the two are intimately connected. For instance, Purusha cannot act by itself. Consciousness cannot act by itself. It needs matter. Consciousness requires matter in order to accomplish anything. And then the other side, matter can only act. Matter is the active principle, but it will only act when it is in union with consciousness. So I don't want to get too much into detail, but this is just some points to help you understand this relationship according to the Sankhya philosophers. The Sankhya philosophers say that, yes, they say that matter becomes active, that matter manifests as the forms and features of this world only due to the influence of consciousness. Only when consciousness comes near matter, then matter starts to manifest everything. Matter changes, transforms. The Sankhya philosophers also accept parinama, transformation. And this is how they say it comes about. When the soul comes in contact with matter, then matter transforms. Now, in the modern world, atheistic material scientists, specifically the scientists were known as the quantum physicists. You may have heard this, quantum mechanics, quantum physics. So they have a very, very similar understanding of the relationship between consciousness and matter. They say that whenever you observe anything, whenever matter is observed by a conscious witness, then matter transforms, it becomes changed. There's no way you can stop that. By the act of observing matter, then there is some change. Actually, they explain in this way, that matter is always in a kind of potential state. There's no telling, there's an equal chance of one thing happening or another thing happening. But it's the effect of consciousness that determines whether one thing or another thing will happen. And they give so many examples. For instance, I'll just tell you one example. They say, this is a famous live cat, dead cat example. You put a cat in a box, and in the box there is a vial of poison. And whether or not the poison, that poison vial will break open, there's some mechanical arrangement, a hammer is poised to break the glass. So whether or not that will break, that depends on some, there's some radioactive material in there, which is emanating electrons or whatever, emanating atomic particles. So there's a 50-50 chance whether that a particle will emanate, which will set into motion this machinery, which will break the vial. And when the vial is broken, the cat will be dead. So according to quantum physics, until the observer opens the box and looks inside, nothing happens. It's just a potential state. 50% possibility of the cat living, 50% of it dying. 50% of the poison breaking and dying. So everything just remains in a potential state until the observer opens the box and looks in. And then suddenly, as they say in their lingo, their scientific jargon, the wave function collapse, and suddenly everything is there. Oh, you see either the live cat or the dead cat. You see, so it's the observer that determines. I don't want to get too much into this. You may not understand this, and I can tell you it's not worth understanding. but these are the kind of things they say. The point is, all they're saying is that whatever is happening in matter is due to the presence of consciousness, consciousness impinging upon matter, and then matter reacts as a result. So in this way, modern science and atheistic Sankhya philosophy, they're very similar. Now this raises a problem. Here we have our first problem, which only the Bhagavatam can solve. The first problem is, then what is matter really? If matter is always transforming, changing its shape, things are happening because I look at it, then what is matter in itself? You see? How can that be determined? Because as soon as I or any other conscious observer looks at matter, then matter starts to do things. It starts to change in so many ways. So what is it? So the atheistic Sankhya philosophers, actually they have no real answer, neither do the scientists. Because they have no higher authority. There is only two things, the observer and matter. But Bhagavad philosophy says there is a higher principle, the supreme, on whom both observer and matter are dependent. So the supreme Lord came as Kapiladev to explain what is matter. So let us hear this verse. This is from Canto 3, Chapter 26, Text 10. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Yatta Trigunam Avyaktam Nityam Sarasad Atmakam Pradhanam Prakritim Prahur Ovishesham Visheshavat. The Supreme Personality of God had said, the unmanifested eternal combination of the three modes is the cause of the manifest state and is called Pradhana. It is called Prakriti when it is when in the manifested stage of existence. Now we'll just read a few lines from the purport. The Lord points out material nature in its subtle stage, which is called Pradhan, and he analyzes this Pradhan. The explanation of Pradhan and Prakriti is that Pradhan is the subtle, undifferentiated sum total of all material elements. Although they are undifferentiated, one can understand that the total material elements are contained therein. When the total material elements are manifested by the interaction of the three modes of material nature, the manifestation is called Prakriti. So there is Pradhan and Prakriti. So Pradhan is the root, the unmanifested material nature. Matter in its potential or original form. It is also called Mula Prakriti, the root of matter. And that is avyakta, that is unmanifest. It cannot be seen. We cannot know it. The jiva cannot know it. But the Lord knows it because it is His own energy. Therefore, the Lord can explain it. And what we are seeing, that is called Prakriti. You see, Prakriti, the word pra means very great. And kriti is a root form for instance, the word karma. Kritta means to do. So karma means action. So material nature acts. We see in material nature so many wonderful activities. Therefore it is called Prakriti. So material nature is acting when the three modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, are agitated and set into motion. Otherwise in Pradhana, the Pradhana state, they're not moving. The three modes are there, but they're inert. They're sometimes said to be in balance. But with the touch of consciousness, they're set into motion. Now this takes place in this setting into motion takes place in the phase of creation called the Mahatattva. from out of the pradhan comes the mahatattva, the three modes are set into motion, and everything comes out. So this is what matter is actually. Ultimately, the root is called pradhan. It is an inert potential state, the Lord's own energy. So, now the Sankhya philosophers, they admit to the existence of pradhan. And they say that when the living entity comes to know pradhan, then he will be liberated from it. This is their doctrine of liberation. Now this is also very similar to the modern scientists. The modern scientists, they're investigating matter, because this is what Sankhya is all about too. Investigation, analysis. You analyze matter, analyze matter, analyze matter, until you come to its original primordial state. This is why modern scientists, for instance, they're breaking atoms into particles and trying to break these particles smaller and smaller, trying to come to some original state, primordial state. And they think by doing this, they will become the masters of matter. And they want to uncover the final principle behind everything, the final material principle, of course. And they think when they have that, then they will become the master of matter. And then they say, then our civilization will become so nice because we'll be in complete control over the material energy. So in this way, they have a kind of materialistic conception of liberation. Maybe you recall, I recall when I was young, seeing these futuristic science magazines or science fiction magazines. On the cover, there would be some very idealistic painting. There would also be a date there, like 1990, you see. This was back in 1965, so there'd be a date. 1990, and you'd see everything is very shining and beautiful, very wonderful crystalline towers, the city's very perfectly clean, robots doing all the work. Every family has its own rocket car. And somewhere you'd see an advertisement in the picture, moon excursions, only $2,000. So 1990 has come and gone, and things are not quite like that yet. So anyway, this is their idea of material progress. That as we understand matter more and more, and finally come to its primordial, understand its primordial root state from which everything is coming, that original potential state which is pradhan, then we will become masters, we will be liberated. So the Sankhya philosophers, they have a parallel conception. Their idea is that somehow we've blundered into matter, set it all into motion, all these things are happening to us, birth, old age, disease, death, we're suffering. So what should we do? We should research, investigate, analyze, and understand matter as pradhan, in its primordial state again. Then it becomes inert, and we're no longer attached or attracted to it, and we are liberated. That's their idea. Now, Bhagavatam rejects this whole premise. Bhagavatam says, pradhan cannot be known. You see, the Sankhya philosophers and the scientists, they're saying, this is our goal, to know primordial matter. But Bhagavatam says, sorry, it cannot be known. Again, for the reason that it is Krishna's energy. It is Krishna's own Shakti. And therefore, we cannot know it apart from Krishna consciousness. You see, the endeavor of the atheistic scientists and the atheistic Sankhya philosophers is to try to grasp this energy, of course, independently from Krishna. They don't admit the existence of Krishna. So therefore, pradhan, or the material nature, remains actually ever unknown to them. Now, Shukadeva Goswami, He explains what pradhan is like in this verse from the two verses from the 12th chapter, chapter 4, verses 20 and 21. Nayatro vacho namano satvam tamo rajo vamahad adayomi na prana buryendriya devata va na sanivesha kalo loka kalpa na svapna jagram na chatat sushuptam na kam jalam buranilo agnirarka samsupta vachchunya vad apatarkyam tanmula bhutam padam amananti. Srila Sukadeva Goswami says, in the unmanifested stage of material nature called pradhan, there is no expression of words. See, so how will any scientist write a book about the primordial state of matter? Sukadeva Goswami says, there is no expression of words. This is Canto 12, Chapter 4, verses 20 and 21. There is no mind. There is no mind to understand pradhan. There is no manifestation of the subtle elements beginning from the mahat, nor are there the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. There is no life, air, or intelligence, nor senses, nor demigods. There is no definite arrangement of planetary systems, nor are there present the different stages of consciousness, sleep, wakefulness, and deep sleep. There is no ether, water, earth, air, fire, or sun. The situation is just like that of complete sleep or of voidness. Indeed, it is indescribable. Authorities in spiritual science explain, however, that since pradhan is the original substance, it is the actual basis of material creation. So, this brings us to another point. Now, I just want just to say this again so you understand. According to Bhagavatam, pradhan is unknowable. Before moving on to the next point, I just want to stress this. So therefore, the whole effort of the atheistic Sankhya philosophers and material scientists is futile. The scientists may break atoms, molecules into atoms, and atoms into particles, and particles into subparticles, and muons, and quarks, and whatever else they call them, and keep breaking them down, but they'll never reach any end. You see? Because the end that they're searching for is unknowable, unexplainable, incomprehensible. This is Maya. This is Maya. They're just running after an impossible hope. It remains ever outside of their reach. And similarly, the Sankhya philosophers, they think by understanding pradhan, they will become liberated. That is beyond all hope. They'll never be liberated. They'll just go on analyzing matter without end. And Maya Devi will keep beckoning them. Yes, yes, you're very close. Keep researching. Come on. And thus the world goes on. So, now, in this verse we've just read, to move on to the next point, the next problem that we're going to look at of Sankhya philosophy. Tanmula bhutam padam amananti. Authorities in spiritual science explain, however, that since pradhan is the original substance, it is the actual basis of material creation. So yes, there are statements in the Vedic scriptures which refer to pradhan or the Lord Shakti as the original vastu, the original substance, because it is the Lord's energy. Now the Sankhya philosophers, they interpret these statements to mean that pradhan, being original or beginningless, is therefore independent. You see, therefore they come to their dualistic conclusion. Sankhya philosophy is dualistic. It is not monistic like Mayavadi philosophy. It is dualistic. There are two ultimate truths. There is consciousness and there is matter. So, the Sankhya philosophers say And you recall yesterday I was saying the difference between Vedanta or Bhagavata philosophy and these other Vedic philosophies like Sankhya, Yoga and so on, is to be found in their the explanation of the cause. So the Sankhya philosophers, they say that Pradhan is the Upadana Karana. Pradhan is the ingredient cause. Pradhan is the original, independent source of all ingredients. There is, because they're atheists, of course, there's no God behind controlling Pradhan. Pradhan, or primordial matter, is a truth unto itself. This is their philosophy. And as I said, there are Vedic statements which the Sankhya philosophers take to support this view. For instance, that material nature is anadi, without beginning. So how to understand this? That is all. This mystery is solved in the Srimad Bhagavatam. You see, Srila Prabhupada, as he is entitled, one chapter in the second canto of Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. So all these very difficult, technical, philosophical questions, whatever anyone can think of, the answer is in Srimad Bhagavatam. So here's the answer to this problem. How is it that Pradhan is said to be original? And sometimes even to, said to be the basis of the ingredient cause of material nature. So, here's a verse from Canto 10, Chapter 87, Text 31. Again, 10, 87, 31. I won't read the Sanskrit. The translation states, neither material nature nor the soul who tries to enjoy her are ever born. The word here is aja. Material nature is never born. It is beginningless. Yet living bodies come into being when these two combine, just as bubbles form where water meets the air, and just as rivers merge into the ocean, or the nectar from many different flowers blends into honey. So all these conditioned beings eventually merge back into you, the Supreme, along with their various names and qualities. Now from the purport, a few sentences. Prakriti thus serves as the Upadana Karana, or ingredient cause of creation. In the ultimate issue, however, since she is also an expansion of the Supreme Lord, it is the Lord alone who is the ingredient cause as well as the efficient cause. So although Pradhan, or material nature, is unborn without beginning, still she is dependent upon the Lord as His energy. So therefore she cannot act independently in any way. And the jiva is also, the living entity is also, although beginningless, aja, unborn, is dependent upon the Lord. And it is the Lord who is the controller of both, the Lord who is bringing the two together, the Lord who is causing the interactions to take place, and ultimately both are merging back into the Lord at the time of devastation. And there's a very nice example here, comparing the manifest world to a garden of flowers. So within a garden of flowers there are so many different scents. You see, each flower has its own particular nice smell, nice flavor. But when all these scents are taken together in the form of honey, you see, then their individuality is merged. Although it is merged in one sense, but why is honey sweet? Because all these individual different sweetnesses of the flower are combined. Different flowers are combined, you see? So the individuality is still there, but it is merged together. So anyway, these are different ways of understanding this philosophy, Achincha Bheda Bheda Tattva. So all the individual features of material nature and the living entities, they merge into the body of the Lord at the end, because He is their origin and controller. And again, later on, He manifests them outward. So this is the proper understanding. Not that Pradhan is something, the Vedas calling Pradhan Aja or unborn or original, it does not mean that Pradhan is independent. This is a mistake of the Sankhya philosophy. So, yet, although the Lord is ultimately the controller of material nature and the jiva, as Prabhupada explains in a purport, we should not think, we should not compare Krishna to that old Greek deity Atlas. Remember Atlas holding up the world? So the Lord is a controller of His energies, but it does not mean that He is laboring hard, struggling with His energies, struggling bringing material nature together with the jiva, combining them, doing so much work. No. The Lord, although He's the controller, He is yet independent, svarat. He is independent from material nature. And that's why it seems that material nature works independently from the Lord. It seems that way. The material nature is actually dependent upon the Lord, but it is the Lord who is independent. This is again achincha beta beta tattva, simultaneously one and different. The material nature can never be separated from Krishna, so in that sense there's oneness. But Krishna is ever independent from material nature, so therefore there's difference. And they're simultaneous, you cannot separate them. This is why it's called achincha, inconceivable. It's like, to get a nice understanding of this achincha, maybe some of you have seen, there's a diagram that's used in psychological tests. It's a simple silhouette. You know, silhouette means a black and white drawing. So, two faces, there's two human faces seen from the side view in silhouette against a white background. And the noses are almost touching. So in psychology, this diagram is shown. And the mind, our mind, human mind, can see this either as two faces by looking at the, by focusing on the black silhouette, or if it looks on the white background, it sees a vase, you know, or a drinking glass, a goblet, you see? So simultaneously within this diagram, there are two things. There are a picture of faces, and there is a picture of a wine glass or a drinking goblet. Now the thing is, this is a psychological test, which shows that the mind cannot grasp both concepts together. So if you want, after the class, you can go and draw such a little diagram and look at it. You'll prove to yourself that you can either see only the two faces or only the glass, but you can't see everything together. That's the meaning of a chincha, inconceivable to the mind. So similarly, this relationship of oneness and difference between the Lord and His energy, it is a chincha. You can speculate on it, but your mind will never be able to grasp it. Therefore, we have to accept, finally, the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam and understand in this way. So, the Lord is not like Atlas. He is independent. And that is substantiated here. From Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 10, Text 45. Translation. There is no direct engineering by the Lord for the creation and destruction of the material world. What is described in the Vedas about His direct interference is simply to counteract the idea that material nature is the creator. So again, material nature is acting, but she's acting only under subordination. She is an empowered servitor of the Lord. This is very important. She is the empowered servitor. Maya Devi, or material nature, is the Lord's devotee. The Lord glances at her and empowers her to become Prakriti, the manifester, the manifester of so many wonderful things in this material world. And she seems to be doing this independently. The Lord is never touching her directly. So she's acting out of a sense of devotion to Krishna. Now the atheistic Sankhya philosophers, because they don't accept Krishna, they don't accept God, they can never understand this. Therefore they have great difficulty in conceiving the relationship between the Lord, or we can say the Purusha, and His Prakriti. They end up speculating in so many wrong ways. So here's another very important point to understand about causation. These four points, fourfold points you see on the board. That in every case, the Lord is the remote cause. This is very important. Although the Lord is the cause, He is the cause in every case. He's the operative cause, the ingredient cause, the formal cause, the final cause. He is in every case also the remote cause. He is independent. He's not actually, here in this verse, natasya karmani janmadau. He is not actually doing anything himself, but he is being served by his energies, who are empowered by his transcendental influence. This is Bhagavata philosophy. So the relationship between the Lord and his material nature is a relationship of lila. This is very important. Here we have a verse. Sa esha prakritim shukshmam daivim gunamayim vibhu yadit chayayavo pogatam abhya padyata lilaya. As his pastime, that Supreme Personality of Godhead, the greatest of the great, accepted the subtle material energy, which is invested with the three modes of nature, and which is related with Vishnu. So, as far as Krishna is concerned, he is playing, he is sporting with his material nature. This is Canto 3, Chapter 26, Verse 4. So, he is simply playing with his material nature. And out of a sense of devotion and service to the Lord, she is manifesting this material world. So the Lord's own relationship with this material nature is as Lila Purusha. He is the Purusha, the enjoyer. But he is the Lila Purusha. His enjoyment is one of sport. It is a pastime. Now, we are Purusha. The Jivas are Purusha. And Sankhya philosophy, when they use the term Purusha, they mean the Jiva. But our relationship with material nature is different. We are Karma Purusha. You see? We're trying to enjoy material nature, but we're coming under karma. We're coming under the law of karma. It is not sport. Of course, some rascals, they argue that way. This is my pastime. This is why I've come here as the Mlecha incarnation of Godhead. You see? This is nonsense. In actual fact, we are under under the thumb or under the foot of material nature, being pushed down always. So, why is this? Why is our relationship with the Lord's energy different from His? Because we have given up service to Krishna. We are thinking of ourselves as independent. So again, remembering the example of the spider web, the Lord manifests the spider web. He's playing, he can go anywhere he likes in the spider web. But when the fly comes along and comes sailing into the spider web, happy-go-lucky, what happens to him? He's captured. He's not free to do what he likes in the spider web. He's caught. So now, not all living entities are captured. Those who are Krishna conscious, those who are surrendered to Krishna, engaged only in his devotional service, not thinking of themselves as independent enjoyers, they can also act as the Lord acts, freely within this material nature in devotional service. So now let's look a little more closely at the relationship, at this lila between the Lord and his material nature. I'm going to be referring to some verses, Canto 3, chapter 26, verse 3, and 4, 9, 16, which explain that material nature is Krishna Shakti. Actually, just as the internal potency, the spiritual potency is Krishna Shakti. Actually, they are one. Krishna Shakti is one. But they're relating with Krishna in different ways. And Asta Shakti, the eight gopis. So Krishna is there personally. And he is personally enjoying the service of Srimati Radharani and the gopis. But the material energy is relating with Krishna's impersonal feature, the Brahma Jyoti. You see? She's enacting her service to the Lord, impelled by the influence of the rays of Brahman, as is seen when Lord Mahavishnu glances at Maya. You see, Maya or Pradhan is inert until Krishna glances at her. And that glance is the glare, the impersonal effulgence of Brahma Jyoti, which is surcharged with living entities and time energy. Kala Shishiksha, time energy. And so this infuses Maya with potency. And then she begins to act. So she's relating with the Lord's impersonal feature. So therefore you'll find in the Vedic scriptures, in these verses that I've referred to just now, which I'm not going to read in full because we're taking a little long, you'll find that the background of the material manifestation is the Brahma Jyoti. You'll find that it is explained that the universes manifest out of the Brahma Jyoti. That is the Lord's glance. And the Lord, after glancing at material nature, infusing her this way, then he engages in his pastime of yoga nidra as Mahavishnu. He's sleeping. And while he's sleeping, material nature is making all arrangements. The universes are coming out. Brahma is appearing in the lotus flower. He is creating, giving the living entities their bodies. The whole material manifestation is coming about. As if in a dream, the Lord is sleeping. And all of this is taking place as if a dream. So Srila Prabhupada says, yes, this whole material manifestation is Krishna's own dream in his pastime of yoga nidra. Now, yoga nidra is actually a goddess. Goddess yoga nidra. And she is an expansion or reflection of goddess Yogamaya. So while Mahavishnu is sleeping and yoga nidra is serving him, by manifesting this creation, actually, internally, Krishna is enjoying with Yoga Maya in the spiritual world. Hmm? So this is a complete understanding given in Srimad Bhagavatam. So this, yes, this material existence is actually being supported by the rays of Brahman, the rays of Brahmajyoti, which are emanating from the Lord's glands. Now, that Brahman is called in Srimad Bhagavatam 4.9.16, undivided, original, changeless, unlimited, and blissful. Now, someone may ask, well, we are also Brahman. The jiva is also Brahman. The jiva is a spark within that Brahman energy. So, why aren't we experiencing this blissful state? Why aren't we understanding ourselves to also be undivided, original, changeless, unlimited, and blissful? Here's a mystery. If that is what we are, you see, aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman, then why am I thinking I am this body? Why am I thinking that I'm suffering? So Bhagavatam answers that question. This is Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3, Text 31. Clouds and dust are carried by the air, but less intelligent persons say that the sky is cloudy and the air is dirty. Similarly, they also implant bodily conceptions on the spirit self. So, just as this whole material manifestation is based on the rays of Brahman, is actually supported on the rays of unchanging Brahman. So also, the clouds are supported by the air. Or the dust which is blowing in the sky is supported by the air. And the clouds and air are actually ever distinct. Yet, as this verse says, less intelligent people, when they see the sky full of clouds, they say, oh, the sky has become cloudy, or the air has become dirty. So it's really a matter of perception. You see? If one is Krishna conscious, identifying himself with Krishna, the Supreme Brahman, then he will understand himself to be distinct from the material energy. Just as the pure devotees who come to this material world, they always understand themselves, although they're acting within this material world, they're understanding themselves to be distinct from the material energy. But one who is not Krishna conscious, one who has, due to illusion, separated himself from Krishna, then he becomes overwhelmed by the association of the material nature. And just as a foolish person thinks that the sky is cloudy, so he thinks that I am matter. The sky is not cloudy. Now, the sky is the sky. The sky is the support of clouds. You see, the sky is not cloudy. The sky is not dirty. The sky is simply the support of some dust. But dust never mixes with the sky. But a fool, a foolish person, he may think that way. So similarly, this is what we mean by Maya. It's all simply a matter of perception. If I'm not Krishna conscious, then my vision, my spiritual vision, avritam jnana metena, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, jnaninas nitya vairanam, my vision becomes covered by illusion, by lusty desires. And thus I identify myself foolishly with matter. So the whole of atheistic Sankhya philosophy is simply such a misconception. It's the same sort of misconception. The atheistic Sankhya philosophers, as I said in the beginning of this lecture, they say there's a very intimate relationship between matter and spirit. They actually give the example of iron and magnet. They say the two, matter and spirit, can't help but be attracted together. And thus everything comes out of that. Now this is where their philosophy completely breaks down. Because if it is actually my nature as spirit to be attracted to matter, then where is the hope of liberation? You see, how can I ever become liberated? This is where their philosophy breaks down completely. So in actual fact, let's read from Srimad Bhagavatam. What does Bhagavatam say about this? Yes, Bhagavatam says in Canto 5, 18:38, that it is the Lord who brings the two together. O Lord, you do not desire the creation, maintenance, or annihilation of this material world, but you perform these activities for the conditioned souls by your creative energy. Exactly as a piece of iron moves under the influence of a lodestone, inert matter moves when you glance over the total material energy. So here a magnet is example is also used. But the magnet is the Lord himself. He is the one who exerts his influence over both matter and spirit and brings them together, combines them to form the creation, and separates them again. It is not going on independently, as the foolish Sankhya philosophers say. Actually, as Bhagavatam 7.5.14 says, our attraction is to Krishna. O Brahmanas, as iron attracted by a magnetic stone moves automatically towards the magnet, my consciousness, having been changed by his will, is attracted by Lord Vishnu, who carries a disc in his hand. Thus I have no independence. And the purport reads, Srila Prabhupada's purport reads, as soon as one is purified of material contamination, he is again attracted by Krishna. In the material world, everyone is contaminated by the dirt of sense gratification, and is acting according to different designations, sometimes as a human being, sometimes as a beast, sometimes as a demigod or a tree, and so on. One must be cleansed of all these designations. Then one will be naturally attracted to Krishna. So actually, we are only attracted to Krishna. The spirit soul's attraction is to Krishna. But when we foolishly try to be independent from Krishna, then that attraction, that self-same attraction, is simply perverted. And then we become attracted to some false bodily designation. But that is simply a perversion of our attraction to Krishna. In actual fact, the living entity is never attracted to matter alone. And Prabhupada gives this nice example of a dead body. You see, in the material world, we see that men are attracted to women, women are attracted to men. And people ordinarily think that this is that we're actually attracted by these material forms. But that is not a fact. We're actually attracted by the spirit within. And the proof of that, according to Srila Prabhupada's nice example, is that when a body dies, when the life leaves, it may be a very beautiful man or woman, but if the life leaves that body and there's just dead body on the ground, then it looks horrible. Who's attracted? You see? A dead body. Oh, we become disgusted. So in actual fact, we are not attracted to this material nature. Therefore, the Sankhya philosophy is wrong. We're attracted to Krishna. But due to our perverted desire for independence, that attraction comes through the material nature, and thus we think we're attracted to matter. It is also said in Bhagavatam that Maya is simply the Lord's smile, the potency of the Lord's smile, reflected through material elements. So Krishna's smile is all attractive. You cannot help but be attracted to Krishna's smile. But if you are pervertedly trying to be independent from Krishna at the same time, turn away from Krishna, then you will be attracted to Krishna's smile, which is shining through the material elements. And thus one becomes entangled in material nature. So I think we will stop here. As I said yesterday, in discussing this Bhagavad philosophy, we enter into some very deep areas. Now, in the next days that come, I'm going to try to present themes which are a little more, perhaps, provocative, a little more engaging. Try to get some response from all of you, some back and forth debate going, perhaps. But today I wanted to thoroughly discuss this relationship between the Lord and His material energy. Because this is the... This will help us understand this Shakti Parinama Vada. How, by the Lord's influence, His energy is transforming to manifest this material existence, and how we are captivated by it. So I wanted to thoroughly discuss that today and refute the atheistic Sankhya philosophy. So I hope that you were able to stick to these points and follow them. Are there any questions? Yes?
How is the Mahatattva different in constitution from Pradhan?
Yeah, Mahatattva is the interaction. It is a staging ground of interaction between the jiva and material nature. It is where that interaction begins. After the Lord glances on Pradhan, Pradhan becomes infused with the Jiva Shakti and the Kala Shakti. Then the three modes of nature, which are lying inert within Pradhan, they're activated. And as soon as they're activated, the first manifestation is called the Mahatattva. Out of the Mahatattva comes the total mind, which is manifested from goodness, the total intelligence from passion, the total ahamkara from ignorance. And thus, then, it evolves further, and finally, the entire universe comes out, and all living entities.
So, is that stage Mahatattva just referred to Mahatattva at that moment, or it's from that point on the whole manifestation is referred to as Mahatattva?
Yes, well, the Mahatattva, as I said, is a staging ground within which the material manifestation makes its appearance. So Mahatattva is the background of it. So yes, the whole material existence together can be called, all the universes, everything, is referred to as the Mahatattva. Yes.
You said how Prakriti is manifest due to the three modes of nature being activated. But at that point, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are not. Who is controlling those three modes?
Yes, well, there is Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva within this universe. But Mahavishnu, the Purusha avatars, Mahavishnu and Garbhadakshaya Vishnu and Shiradakshaya Vishnu, they are assuming primordial forms of Brahma and Shiva. Actually, Sadashiva is a manifestation of Sankarshan. Sankarshan is Mahavishnu. That's why Dvaitacharya is said to be simultaneously the incarnation of Mahavishnu and Lord Shiva. Because who is Lord Shiva? Lord Shiva is the Lord Vishnu, but in direct contact with his material nature. So he assumes the special feature of Sadashiva, the primordial Shiva, to be the direct husband of the material nature. And similarly, Pradyumna or Garbhodakashayi Vishnu, from whom Brahma comes, is the primordial form of Brahma, because he is the primordial source of Rajoguna. So actually, yes, the primordial forms or archetypical forms of Brahma and Shiva are found within Vishnu himself, even before the universes appear. Yes? Yes. This is the jiva. When the Lord glances at the material nature, then that glance manifests or enters the material nature in that way, as the Shuddha Sattva. You see? Because that is the Lord's own glance. So his glance is pure. So the first thing that appears within the Mahatattva is the Shuddha Sattva consciousness of the jiva. But by association, you see, the jiva takes shelter of the material nature. So by associating with the material nature, then that consciousness becomes contaminated. Yes?
How the living entity can, in this state, only pure consciousness, take a decision?
Yes, because he is tatastha. He has a choice. That is his nature. So, tatastha shakti, he can choose one way or the other. In that same section you're referring to, Srila Prabhupada says, among the living entities that are placed within the Mahatattva, there are those who choose to become worshippers of the Lord in his Hiranyagarbha form. And thus, they appear later in creation on the Brahma Loka as Brahma and Brahma's direct sons, like the four Kumaras and so on. And they're actually liberated souls within the material universe. So they actually retain that Shuddha-sattva consciousness, even as the material creation unfolds. But so many other living entities, they choose otherwise. Yes? Yes. Well, that is describing the very point of falling down. Because this is the Lord's Leela. This is another one of his Leelas to manifest the material creation, as we've explained here today. We've heard today from Srimad Bhagavatam. So, in executing his Leela, the Lord is accompanied by associates, by his devotees, by his energies, by the living entities. So in this particular Leela, the Leela of creation, this opportunity to choose, to try to be independent from the Lord, is available. So there are some who choose that. And there are others who remain Krishna conscious. For instance, Narada Muni, he also comes into this material world. But why does he come into this material world? To glorify Krishna, wherever he goes, whether spiritual world or material world. Narada Muni, Bhajayavina, Radhika, Ramana, Nami. He's always engaged in glorifying Krishna. So therefore, he's never affected by material contamination. Yes? Well, everyone starts off at that point. Brahma is the original living entity. And so one can become conditioned to be Brahma. It's mentioned in Brahma Sanghita that the living entity who becomes Brahma in the next creation, he has that desire left over from his experience in a previous creation. So there is an initial entrance of the living entity into material nature where he chooses to be Brahma as service to the Lord. But then he becomes conditioned by that. And then after the whole creation is wound up, he goes back to Mahavishnu, but he has this desire, I'd like to be Brahma again. So that means he's attached. So then when he comes back, he may come back as Brahma. Prabhupada actually said, because of this attachment, he might come back as Brahma. He said this on a morning walk in Vrindavan in December 76. He might come back as Brahma, or he might come back as a cat or dog or anything, because of this attachment to the material nature. Yes?
Explaining how the Shankarites, they say...
Sankhyites.
They say that... that actually the jiva has an attraction to matter, and therefore he comes. I'm just trying to figure out why they say that, and what's the necessity for saying that. Why is this part of the explanation?
Yeah, because their philosophy is that there are these two ultimate tattvas. Everything can be explained in terms of prakriti and purusha. So creation is coming out because of the attraction between the two. So that's why it's necessary. Yeah, they say one cannot exist without the other. That's their understanding of these two tattvas. The jiva has desires. It has desires for action and so on, to enjoy. Therefore, the jiva needs material nature in order to exercise these desires. And similarly, the material nature has the potential for prakriti to manifest great things, manifest the great creation. But the material nature can only do this in association with the jiva. Yes?
Where is situated Pradhan or Maha? Because I think in the first country, energy is outside of Parana Ocean or something like that.
Well, as I said, you see, I explained Yoga Maya, Yoga Nidra. Ultimately, everything is personal. So, Brahma Sanghita explains that the Lord is sporting always with His own internal potency. Lord Vishnu sports with goddess Rama Devi, she's called, just as the original Vishnu, Lord Krishna, is always sporting with Srimati Radharani. So, Krishna, he expands into so many Vishnu forms. So, in one Vishnu form, there's the consort is goddess Rama Devi. So, Lord Sankarshan, he's sporting with Rama Devi. And she, as part of her sport, she manifests a reflection of herself. And this reflection is Maya. So the Lord glances at this reflection and infuses this reflection with the power of creation. And so this reflection, Maya, she's serving the Lord, but she's serving the Lord as Yoga Nidra. You see, he's, as also Srila Vyasadeva, Srila Vyasadeva saw in his trance of realization. He saw how the material nature was ashamed to stand before the Lord. She was keeping behind the Lord. So as I was saying, these are different ways of understanding how the material nature, she's actually relating with the Lord's impersonal feature. He's not directly interacting with her, or he's not personally interacting with her. Therefore, We have this description in the Shastras of Lord Mahavishnu sleeping. He's sleeping. He's neutral. He's inactive. And Yoga Nidra, who is an expansion of Yoga Maya, the internal potency, she's serving him in his sleep by manifesting this dreamlike material creation. So for the Lord, it's just a dream. This is just like when you sleep and you have a pleasant dream. It's just doesn't mean so much. But for the living entity, it's reality. He's caught up in it, thinking it's real. And this is a very nice way to understand why he's caught up. Why is the living entity caught up? Because he's forgotten Krishna. If he was Krishna conscious, then he would see this universe exactly as the Lord understands it. It's a dream. Not very important. Actually, there's a verse in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam in which it clearly says that Krishna consciousness means the state of seeing this universe exactly as the Supreme Lord sees it. That is Krishna consciousness. So when one is not Krishna conscious, that means seeing this universe in another way. For instance, as the Sankhya philosophers see. They have a big philosophy, but it's their own invention. Therefore, it's Maya. Yes.
Can you explain how the Sankhyas?
Yes.
Okay. How they think that if they analyze everything down to a fundamental principle, then they'll become liberated. So you're saying how they can't do this because they're dealing with Krishna's energy, his own Shakti. But they don't accept Krishna.
Yes.
So if you were preaching to a material scientist to use the correlations, who doesn't accept Krishna, how would we convince him that he cannot come to understanding this pradhan or this material energy? Because he doesn't accept Krishna, so we can't use that argument to even accept that. So how would one expose this to a material scientist?
And Srila Prabhupada gave a nice example for this. The example of the post-dated check. He said, this is what science is all about. They're promising in the future we will understand. We will become masters of nature. We will solve the problem of death. We will create life from matter. All these fantastic promises. And to realize these promises, they're saying, give us money now. You know, they're saying, turning to the governments, give us funding so that we can do our tests and experiments. We're getting closer, closer, closer. And Srila Prabhupada said, this is like accepting a post-dated check. You see? Just like Murari Gupta Prabhu, maybe someday he'll sell his Enfield motorcycle. But I'm sure he would not accept a post-dated check for it. Someone would come and say, look, I don't have the money on my account now, but I'll give you a check. Dated the 1st of next month. You take this and I'll take the motorcycle and drive off and you'll be happy. I don't think he would accept this. No one with any sense would accept this. But this is what they're doing, the scientists. They're talking about how in the future they will create life from matter, how they will solve all death, how they will explain everything. But they haven't. They haven't shown that life comes from... They haven't shown any of these things. Even they're admitting, some of the more honest scientists are admitting, the more we study, the more we learn, the less we know. Because the more they study, the more mysteries they're confronted with.
But there's a trend, I mean, just to... Because I deal a lot with preaching among scientific students. I studied science myself, so how would you... One could say, well, there's a certain faith in society and the scientists because they've had such a good track record so far in being able to predict and manipulate matter according to like certain laws which they've established, and with good effect. I mean, they can do certain things that look pretty prestigious. And
yeah, but this is just magic. You see, the word magic comes from Greek, and it's our English word magic comes from Greek, and the Greek word comes from Sanskrit maya, Actually, in Sanskrit, the word Maya also means magic. So they have done some things, some impressive-looking things, but ultimately they're insubstantial. As Srila Prabhupada says, since the beginning of the world, people have born and died. Prabhupada said the death rate is 100%. So they've done some magic, they've done some, you know, they've built some wonderful machines or this or that, or cured some disease. Seemingly they've prolonged life, but still everyone is dying. Still the basic fundamental nature of things remains the same. Just on the surface there's some little magic going on. So because people are foolish, then they give so much credit. Because they want, Prabhupada said, cheaters and cheated. They want to be cheated. Therefore, they place their full faith in these atheistic scientists. Too many questions. Yes?
The living head is originally full of knowledge. And so, how come he gets the idea to serve the Lord independently if he simultaneously knows what it might mean?
Well, he is independent. He has the a minute independence, Srila Prabhupada says. There is a minute independence inherent in his nature. That is necessary for there to be love, because love is voluntary. So one loves Krishna not because he has to, but because he wants to. So that love is based on free will. But because of that, there is also the possibility, the potentiality of denying Krishna, of turning away from Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada said that, he said in one talk, he said, maybe out of all the total manifestation of living beings, maybe 10% choose to try to be independent from Krishna.
At the same time, they know that that is a bad choice, but they still make it.
No, they don't know. Because it happens in stages, very imperceptibly. They know because they're warned by Krishna. Srila Prabhupada said Krishna warned us 3 times not to come to this material world. But they think it's all right. It has to do with living entity becoming a little too self-assured. You see? Just like we see in ISKCON, there are sometimes devotees who think, I'm an advanced devotee. You see, I don't have to be so careful. I mean, I've been a devotee for 10 years now. I know the difference between sense gratification and Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said we should take some risk. So like in this way, they justify imperceptibly, just very slightly imperceptibly, going more and more into Maya. First it starts off in the name of preaching. And others might warn them, a Prabhu, this is a little, you know, this is a little far out. No, no, it's getting good results. Therefore I can take this risk. But by associating imperceptibly with Maya, they become gradually more conditioned by Maya. And they can't see how it's happening until Maya finally seizes them completely. Yes?
So, does it mean that when such a soul becomes liberated again, he simultaneously loses minute independence because Krishna said such a soul never comes back?
No, as I said, the independence must be there in order for love to be there. Yeah. But he voluntarily surrenders to Krishna. You see? Out of loving attraction to Krishna, he voluntarily surrenders to Krishna. But that's done, you see, from the platform of, you know, still, tatasta, his constitutional platform. He does it because he wants to. And because he wants to, that attracts Krishna to him. If it's done by force, Krishna is not attracted. Just like the Karma Mimamsa. This is another one of the philosophies, six systems. So they worship the Lord. They render sacrifice to the Lord, but only pro forma, because they want sense gratification. They want the results. So therefore, because they're attached to the results of sacrifice, they think, all right, I must do this. Yes, okay, so let's set up an altar, let's worship the Lord, we'll chant the prayers to Lord Vishnu. But there's no devotion. See, there's no voluntary devotion. They're doing it out of a need for sense gratification. And Krishna is not interested in that. He doesn't reciprocate. Of course, he gives them the sense gratification, or that's actually given by the material nature. He's not personally interested. But one who voluntarily surrenders to Krishna, then Krishna, Prabhupada says, you take one step towards Krishna, he takes 10 steps towards you.
But after that, there is no way to fall down again.
Yes, well, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that having once returned to the spiritual world from this material world, one never returns. Yad gatva na nivartante. One does not come here again. Why? Because you've learnt your lesson. There's an English expression, once burned, twice shy. You see? If just like a child, father tells a child, there's a hot pan on the stove, don't touch that, it's hot. And the child is naughty and thinks, I'll do it anyway. He touches and burns his hand. So the next time he'll be very shy to touch that. Yes?
How does the living entity actually look like?
How does he look like?
Having form or shape.
Well, in his constitutional position here within this material world, he's like a spark. Jiva Atma is a spark of consciousness. But when the Jiva returns to his position of pure devotional service in the internal energy, then the internal energy awards him with a spiritual body, which is non-different from his constitutional, essential spiritual ego, that spark. So he actually is his spiritual form. But the form is awarded by the yoga maya. Here in the material world, we're awarded a material form by Mahamaya. And the soul is restricted simply to giving consciousness to this body. Therefore, it's just a spark. But the form is there. The spiritual form is said to be there, just like the form of a tree is within the seed, but it's only in potential.
This form is eternal form?
Eternal identity, yes. But it is only manifest in this spiritual nature, in the internal nature. So Srila Prabhupada said, you can implant your soul into the internal nature here and now by chanting Hare Krishna. As soon as you chant the Hare Krishna mantra, when we say Hare, we're addressing the internal potency, and the soul is becoming connected with the internal potency. And so from this chanting, the spiritual body develops.
When Krishna glances over the Pradhan,
yes,
the Shiva goes also with this glance.
Yes.
So at that stage, it is already reduced to a spark.
Yes.
But before that stage?
Hmm?
Before that stage, before Krishna...
Then Srila Prabhupada explained that the Jiva is within the Lord, within the body of Mahavishnu, just like the father of a child, before he impregnates the mother, the living entity is within him, within his body. Understand? Yes, so far. At one point, the speculation must end. Yes?
I just want if you could sum up basically how we in our line we came from that Sankacharya philosophy in personalism through Madhvacharya and Madhvacharya to my present position, and also if you could just clarify whether it was Sabhagam Bhattacharya who established our Siddhanta.
Well, this question is a little off the track, so I'll answer it very briefly. Our sampradaya is the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya sampradaya. It doesn't have anything to do with Shankaracharya. Shankaracharya, that is the Mayavadi sampradaya. So Brahma is the first acharya within this universe. He received the knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam from Lord Krishna. He spoke it to Narada Muni. Narada Muni spoke it to Srila Vyasadeva, and so on and so forth. It was lost in the Kali Yuga, and so Madhvacharya revived it by going to see Srila Vyasadeva in the Himalayas. And thus, the knowledge of the Sampradaya was revived. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared within the Sampradaya, and as we've been explaining, he has given the perfect Siddhanta. You've used this term, Siddhanta. So Siddhanta means, just like there's a preparation, Alu Siddha in India. It means mashed potatoes. So Alu is a potato. So when you cook potatoes together and you mash them, then you get Alu Siddha. So Siddha means the essence of the Alu in the form of this mashed potatoes. So Lord Chaitanya has given the Siddhanta of the Sampradaya. He has taken all that has come before, brought it together, and endowed it with Krishna Prema, pure love of Krishna. So it is very, very sweet. Most sweet thing. So Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya was instructed by, he is a disciple of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but as Lord Chaitanya was given this Siddhanta of this Madhva Gaudiya, Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. Yes? Feature.
And when he was in Parikram, I think before they had Harihara temple, Kamal Krishna Goswami said that I think he